And hello, everybody. How are you today? This is Russ Salzberg along with Paulie Dotz. We welcome you once again to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number, as always, is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. We are in the bye week. The building is quiet today. And, you know, when you are having the type of season at 1-6, the bye week, I would say, comes at a good time. You know, when all is going good, you're happy. You can't wait to play the next game. And I'm not even suggesting that the Giants are not anxious to play the next game. But, you know, with everything going around and negativity and everybody, whose fault is this and whose fault is that, Paul, I think for the players, in particular for the players, just to get away – To you know, the players are anxious to try and turn it around, but to get away from, you know, who said this and who said this, and it's my fault and it's our fault and it's his fault, and whose job should be on the line and blah blah blah. I think it's good for everybody to take a break.
Yeah, I keep calling it time to reset, and it really is, because what the Giants want to do now is try to take a couple of days to visit family, visit friends, go home if you're out of town. Get away from all the papers, all the talk, all the stuff that's going on around here, and at least come back with a fresh mind. I mean, look, the only way the Giants are going to be able to win some games in the second half of the season, Russ, is if they're focused, they're concentrating on what they're doing, they're giving maximum effort, and the best way to do that is to clean out all the garbage that's surrounding you up to this point. It's the only way.
All right. Listen, you and I, folks, it's no secret. I don't know if you checked Jerry Reese's press conference out yesterday on Giants.com. I thought Jerry, you know, handled it very well. You know, some others might not think so. I know you and I looked at each other and we responded the same way. We both said, you know, it is what it is. You know, he wasn't passing the buck. You know, people were saying, and I thought that was tremendously unfair. You know, did Jerry throw this guy under the bus? Did he throw Ben under the bus? Jerry didn't do that. Jerry said, it's on me. It's my roster. That's why we're 1-6. But like Ben says, there's plenty of blame to go around. It's not just one guy.
Yeah.
So he pointed out some things. But I thought Jerry handled it well. It is what it is. And, you know, like he said, it's his roster. It's 1-6. They got to work hard. They got to try and get out of it. You know, I don't know what else you wanted him to say.
Nobody was shielded from any blame yesterday at all. Everybody.
That's a very good word. Nobody was shielded from any blame.
Nor should they be.
No.
I mean,
they're all in it together.
When it goes this bad, everybody has to have a part in it. And in any event, one thing I will say, Russ, and I do think moving forward, this is the one thing that has to be kept in mind at all times.
Right.
We have to watch, and this is what ownership will do, as well as Jerry himself. You have to watch how hard will the players prepare and how hard will they play. That is the one thing that will be indicative as to how this team moves forward after this season and then goes into 2018. You want to see guys who want to be here, who want to be part of the solution, who are not going to just throw their hands up and say, look, this is miserable, I'm not dealing with it.
Not just the players.
Everybody.
Top to bottom, coaches, everybody. It's how everybody deals with it. You know, how hard do you want to work to get out of this mess? It, like, to me, And players always think this way. Players always think about, we want to win this game. We want to win this game.
Of course.
As a fan growing up, you know, when people talk about, you know, when you see it in all leagues, be it the NBA, baseball, whatever, oh, let's tank a season or get into.
No.
I never wanted my team to do that. If they were 0-15, I wanted them to win the last game of the season.
I'm with you 100%.
So to me, it's how bad you want it. What do you want to do to get better? You know, it's what's the old cliche? When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Now it's time for the Giants to show just what they're made of and how tough they are.
And one that's even more appropriate if you're not going to be part of the solution, then you're part of the problem and you need to go.
And don't be the problem.
Yeah.
And don't be the problem. All right, let's open up the phone lines this morning again. 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's start off in Queens with our friend Travis. Travis, how are you today, my friend?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
What's going on, buddy?
Ain't none. That Jerry Reese conference, that was, if I had to cast a vote for tomorrow, he would not get it. That was horrible. And here's why. He put it on himself in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we're going with that notion. Okay, he put it on himself. Good. When he continues and finishes, he's blaming everybody in a sense of saying, Eli has to play better. The playmakers, they have to be in a position to make plays, so on and so forth. And all these games that we lost, we was in half of these games. And you say Eli has to play better. The reason why we don't never have to say that about Tom Brady is because they make sure that Tom Brady is protected. I mean, the 10 years he's been here, he tried to put a great O-line around Eli, but he fell. And this year he failed. He didn't ask him about the O-line. He said that we wanted to stay young.
Well, but hold on a second, Travis. He wasn't absolving himself. I mean, you know, he said everybody. He said Eli had to play better. He didn't say Eli stinks. Eli, everybody has to play better.
Eli has said he has to play better.
Yeah. If you speak to Eli after every game or in practice every week, it's been a constant thing, Trav. Eli says, I got to play better. The O-line, I mean, nobody was escaped what? Yesterday.
No. You're right. Nobody was. Right. It's true. But if you're going to go with the notion of it's on me, and then everything has to be on you. And with the comment when he said that they came in with the big head, I doubt it. I doubt they came in with the big head. The fact that they lost by 25 points last year in the playoffs. How in the world are you coming to the thinking that you're a good team?
Trav, and thanks for the call. I could see, you know, I think that was a fair issue. And, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about that. I wondered sometimes. It wasn't like foremost on my mind all the time. I know you've had some reservations about it. Listen, the offensive line was not a head scratcher as much as the play of the defense. I think we would all say mm-hmm. that all of a sudden the defense was showing flaws. They weren't able to make big stops in crucial situations. And then you start to think, well, were they taking things for granted? Were they going to be able to make the stop as soon as they needed to make the stop? They weren't doing that.
I mean, I think what bothers me about Travis's call is, you know, he wants to put everything on Jerry. Well, when you're 1-6, nobody escapes blame. I'm sorry. Nobody's doing a great job when you're 1-6, Russ. Nobody.
Listen, you get to a certain point, it's preparation, it's getting everybody ready, it's putting it all together. It's everybody. This is not a one – there's not – you can't point to one thing and say this is the only reason why the team is 1-6.
And if you
cannot
just
do that.
If you just want to go X's and O's on the football field, we've seen the offense fail, we've seen the defense fail, and we've also seen special teams fail. I mean, you can't get any more evidence than that. It has been a total lack of production. Okay, or consistent production is probably a better phrase. Lack of consistent production across the board.
Well, the comment that has been a theme here since the season started with us, Paul, has been we haven't gotten the complete complementary football.
Yeah, Ben likes that word.
Offense, defense, and special
teams. Ben likes
that
word. Yeah.
And listen.
They got it in Denver. That was it.
Look at what we're talking about, special teams. I know we've said this several times. You have a punter, Brad Wing, who is a bona fide weapon. You could say we kind of lost two games. He was a main culprit with two awful kicks. One was for 20 punts. One was for 28 yards. One was for 15 yards. Aldrick Roses missed a field goal last week. I'm not saying that is the reason we lost, but that would have tied the game. There's been failure all the way around. So it to say it's just one guy, just not fair. I mean, Ben has said that from the get-go. Plenty of blame to go around. Yeah. Bob in Maryland. Bob, how are we doing today?
Hello.
Bob. Say, Bob.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Bob. Can you hear us?
All right, great. Hey, I want to talk about Shane Vereen.
Yes.
P-Dot, you had, before the season started, you had pointed to Shane Vereen's return from injury as a major upgrade.
Thought it would
be. Improvement expected in the offense.
Thought it would be.
You know, the last, he's not really contributed that much. I'm really surprised the last couple weeks when we've had no other receivers that Shane Vereen's not been more involved. He's had a total of 2 yards mm-hmm. receiving in mm-hmm. the last two games. So mm-hmm. first I just want to ask you why you think that Shane Vereen's not being utilized more as a receiver, more involved in the offense.
And I suspect that's one of the things they will figure out during their self-scout, that they have not utilized Shane Vereen to his maximum of potential. It has always been my belief that when they signed him, he was one of the best third down running backs in football. The guy knows the system. He knows how to catch the ball. He knows how to pass protect. He's a very smart football player. It seems to me he has been underutilized. At least that's my opinion. And I certainly think now with the wide receiving core as depleted as it is, and I know Shane Vereen as a player, he has often gone in motion, created an empty backfield, and lined up outside or in the slot. He's done that in his career a lot. It's not like he can't do it. He knows how to handle that. It seems to me when they self-scout, they will probably say, you know what? We kind of let this one slip through the cracks. Shane Vereen needs to be more involved in what we're doing. I really think that's going to happen because at this point, it's a mystery to me why it hasn't.
Yeah, that was exactly my point. Thanks. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, as many other fans becoming tired of Jerry Reese, and you know, I just hope that if Mara talks to the press at some point and is asked, hey, what's the future of Jerry Reese? That Mara will give him the answer. Jerry Reese, the glib answer that Jerry Reese always gives to any direct question, which is we'll keep all our options open. I think that would be a great answer for Mara to give if he's asked that question.
Well, you know,
thanks very much.
All right, Bob, thank you. I'll tell you what, I'm certainly not going to speak for John Mara, but I would certainly think that's the kind of thing I would expect you know, John Mara to say.
Much like his father, he always said, you don't make decisions in the middle of a season because emotions will get in the way of logic. You wait until it's over. You sit down. You take a breath. You evaluate. Then you go about making your decisions. To do anything now would be really a reckless.
Well, you know what what do most people say, especially, you know, I love the end of a season in any sport. They'll go to the GM and they'll ask the coach right away, what's, you know, I can't make a decision right now. Everything is too raw. It's too painful. Mm-hmm. Making decisions when you're upset and angry does one thing. It clouds your judgment.
No question.
You can't do that. You have to have a clear head. And you, listen, trust me when I say this. The Mara family, in particular, Mara and the Tisch family, but I say the Mara family because there was the patriarch of the family. Let him rest in peace, Mr. Mara Wellington and John Mara, his son, the entire Mara family. They bleed. They know what the pain is, and they know how important the fans are. But I'm going to say this. You can't make a decision just based upon the fans being upset. Because fans deal strictly from the heart. You know, they live and die. A lot of them live vicariously through their teams, through their favorite players. You have to have a thick skin and be able to remove yourself and think about the situation mm-hmm. and say, here's X, Y, and Z. These are the changes we need to make, and this is what we're going to do or what we're not going to do. But you can't react for every call or every columnist writing something. Because I said this to Paul yesterday, and I will say it again today. If you go ahead and look at, you know, what the people were talking, some of the columns today in the papers are about, oh, you know, when Jerry said they bought into the hype. Maybe some of the players bought into the hype, the team bought into the hype. Did the Giants create the hype? Did the Giants say, did Jerry say, we're winning the Super Bowl? Did Ben say, we're winning the Super Bowl? The only thing I've heard them say, we want to get that fifth trophy in the showcase, right?
Right.
Nobody said that. However, the however is, I pulled it out. The News and the Post. You know, I pulled, and they're great previews to the season. They're football previews to the season, respectively, each one. The News has the Giants beating the Patriots 27-24 in this Super Bowl. 27-24. Said they're going to win the NFC East with a record of 10-6. They're going to the Super Bowl. You know, some of the people.
But, you know, that's a lame excuse. I'm sorry, but, you know, they bought into the hype. Come on.
No.
That's a lame excuse for a roster that just isn't prepared.
No, what I'm saying to you is, and thanks very much for the call, what I'm saying to you is that, you know, the media can condemn, members of the media can condemn the Giants. Fair enough. Jerry, this guy should lose his job, and that guy should lose the job. Well, let me tell you something. The media created the hype. A lot of the media created the hype. If you're picking the Giants, if you pick the Giants at the beginning of the season to win the Super Bowl 27-24 over the Patriots, then how the hell can you criticize the Giants for doing this and for doing that when you yourself said this team is good enough to win the Super Bowl? If that's the case, should you be fired because you created a hype that's not true? Now, I'm not suggesting the person should be fired, but the point is, let's be fair about it. That's all I'm saying. You know, people tend, if their predictions come out the wrong way, let's beat up the people who screwed up our predictions. That's not fair. If you want to say out of the gate, boy, the Giants stink. I don't like who they drafted. I don't like their free agent signings. I don't like their moves. They stink. This is an overrated team. And then it happens. Then you can boast and pop your buttons and say, I told you so. But if you were going ahead and making the predictions that they're going to the big show and then they don't, well, whose fault is that? You made the predictions, so you like the assessment. You assess the talent as being Super Bowl contenders. So now you're blaming the Giants because your predictions are wrong. You can't have it both ways. Chris in Syracuse. Chris, how are we doing today?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's going on?
I've just got a couple of thoughts looking towards the future, I guess. One of them being I think we need to assess the rest of the season, like I said, and find out, you know, how much Ben McAdoo can adapt. I mean, I think we've seen some adaptation because he was forced. I'd like to continue to see some growth there, but I really think that we should really be looking towards, and maybe made a misstep in the first place, but looking towards a run first type of offense. Even though we have the skilled players, with Eli getting older, we really need to, I think, bolster that line and kind of change directions completely and get a decent line and get a decent run game and build around Eli that way. And then when he leaves in a few years, then hopefully you still have that nucleus of the team in place for the next guy to come behind him instead of walking into this, you know what I mean, just disaster that we've had offensively. I think that that's, you know, the right way to go about doing it. And I also just wanted to get some thoughts. I'm real concerned about our corners because DRC is kind of, you know, he's getting on the back nine, as we say. And Apple, though I think that he can play better, so far hasn't really shown a whole lot to make you want to say, oh, well, I think we're going to be all set there. So corner depth is something that I'm you know, real concerned with. So I guess I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
Well, first off, I think that Ample's been very inconsistent this year, but he had a terrific rookie season.
And he had his last game was probably his better game of the season.
In my opinion, I think you can still take a wait-and-see approach with Eli Apple in terms of is he the long-term shutdown guy that you want on that side of the field. I don't know that I'm ready to make that decision yet because the results to me in a season and a half have been somewhat mixed. I don't think he's a washout, but I'm not ready to say that he's the man quite yet. So that's how I approach Eli. I still need to see more over the rest of the season. Your other comment, which I think is very astute, Russ, if you've got Eli Manning, who has one, two, three, whatever it is he's got left in his tank, you do not want him throwing the ball 45 times a game. A, because his arm is going to get tired and run out of gas sooner or later, just like Peyton's did. And B, because the more he drops back, the more he's susceptible to getting pounded and getting hit. And the cumulative effect of the hits he's taken over 14 years, there's no question that will continue to take a toll, especially as he gets older. So you are 1,000% correct that the Giants need to get whatever they can out of Eli. They need to get more of a power running game going at this stage of his career. And your point is even more emphasized when you talk about whenever Eli's going to hand it off. And it may be another year or two, Russ, we don't know, after 18, after 19. If he hands the ball to Davis Webb, and Davis Webb has that much NFL experience, because we do think, we agree, he should get some.
Yeah, okay. We talked about it yesterday.
It's going to be limited. He's going to.
What'd you say? A taste.
Yeah, nothing he gets else. His foot right. in the water.
Right.
Well, guess what? Is it fair to Davis Webb to say you've had your foot in the water? Now you've got to wing it 45 times a game. That's right. Not a good idea either.
No,
give him a running game to work with.
And thank you for the call. I think also what's the term you use? This self scouting.
Yes.
I think where's the fullback fit into this situation?
Yeah, well,
you know, that's part of protection, part of the running game, the part of a power running game.
And we've seen.
I think that there's been a listen. Obviously, the Giants came into the season wanting to have a running game. It we've seen glimpses with Gallman. We've seen glimpses,
yeah.
and certainly Darkwa.
Yeah,
I meant to say Darkwa first. We've seen glimpses, but. It hasn't been there all the time.
Unanswered questions that still need to be sorted out once the Giants get back from their bye week. We need to find out, what is Paul Perkins? Because he's been hurt now.
Yeah.
And we don't really know. We need to find that out. We need to find out, can Darkwa stay healthy and be a guy you can count on over a number of games as opposed to just 1 week?
Fair enough.
We need to find out, what is Gallman's true potential? What is his upside? How good can he be? Could he be the featured back? We don't know any of this stuff. We don't know if Travis Rudolph belongs on an NFL roster for a full season. We think so, but we don't know that. We don't know how consistent Roger Lewis may or may not be. We don't know about Eli Apple. So many questions have to be answered in the final 9 games of this season.
And you know, you just mentioned Travis Rudolph and Roger Lewis, and that goes into what we were talking about, Paul and myself, yesterday, when some people say, well, let's see what David's, Webb can do with this. Well, in fairness to Webb, we said it's not fair to him to give him an offense that is certainly nowhere near what it should be because of all the injuries. And then in fairness to the guys like Rudolph, mm-hmm. and Lewis, is it fair to them?
Ingram.
And Ingram, yeah, to show them, to see what they have when you're putting a rookie quarterback into the situation with zero experience.
And can I throw one more name in there, Russ? We haven't even discussed him, but B.J. Goodson, I think we all believe he is going to be a really good player.
Right.
But he's having trouble staying on the field.
And that's an alarming situation. Now, you don't know what it was a shin situation. Again, you don't know, but listen, this is the
NFL.
We
need to find out. Can you count on him to stay on the field? We need to find that out.
Injuries are certainly part of, you know, playing in the National Football League, but if you can't be on the field, you can't show just how good you are. Ken in New Jersey. Ken, how you doing today?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Who is this?
I'm calling in. It's Robert Plummer in Florida.
Oh, how you doing,
hey,
sir?
Hey, Rob. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right.
What do you got for us?
Just kind of a rebuttal for the conversation that they were having about Jerry Reese.
Go ahead. Spit it out.
Oh, Well, look, Jerry, I was actually happy when he first, when he became the GM. You know, I was rooting for him.
Okay.
Where I believe...
Oh, he's got a bad cell.
Bob, you're going to have to call back because we have a bad connection. I appreciate the call. Try again, please. In the meantime, now we're going to go back to Ken in New Jersey. Ken, how we doing?
How we doing, fellas?
Hi.
Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, what's up, buddy?
Just to let you know, I was listening yesterday, Paul, and I would do your job for free.
There you go.
Anybody's listening.
Hey, you know what? I shouldn't say this, but I actually would pay to do my job.
That a boy.
Boy, you just got yourself in trouble, boy. You shot yourself right. Now forget the foot right in the keister.
The missus is not even going to let me in the house tonight.
Yeah. Management heard that remark, too.
We won't tell nobody. Yesterday, I have one problem with Jerry Reese's statement. I know Eli says he has to play better. I am tired of hearing from anyone from the Giants organization saying Eli has to play better. It is, in my opinion, and it might not be a popular one, that Eli is the best player on this football team, even when Beckham's on the field. And he's playing the best of his ability. They have nothing around him. There's nothing he can do. There really isn't. I feel like they're doing a disservice to his legacy. I think three out of the five linemen that we have on the field would not start on any other NFL team. This is just my opinion, guys. Don't, you know, get mad at me. That's Eric Flowers, Bobby Hart, and John Jerry. And last thing is, between the Sterling Shepard last year in Philly getting his arm held behind his back and getting no flag from that, the two touchdowns that were taken from him in Philly. Yes, I'm talking about the first one, too, because he crossed the plane before he hit the pile. Oh,
I agree with you, but go ahead. Yep.
And then this touchdown last week really makes me question the integrity of the referees. It does. It seems blatant. I know I have a biased opinion because I'm a Giants fan, but, I mean, this happens to other teams, too. What do you think the Jets are talking about after their touchdown was taken away from them against the Pats? You know, like, I mean, give me a break.
If I may address your last point, I believe for a long time, and I talked to George Young about this in 1998 after he retired from the Giants and became a VP of football operations with the NFL. I talked to George way back when, and I said to him, George, you got to improve the quality of the overall officiating in this league. You got to clean up the rule book because there are a lot of rules that, quite frankly, don't make sense, that are contradictory and need to go. That was my first comment to him. My second comment was, you got to do a better job with preparing and recruiting officials so that they can, in fact, do a better job on Sundays. And to my knowledge, these kinds of things have not really been revamped to the degree that we would see a dramatic impact on the field. Consequently, every Sunday, when we watch our highlights at the end of the weekend, we wind up seeing at least one or two calls that everybody's got to be upset about because it's like, how did that happen? Why did they call that? Oh, I don't know about that call. And it happens around the league. It's not just the Giants. You know it's the Giants because you watch the Giants every play. I totally understand that. It's a problem that I have had for years with this league. When you consider the money that's invested in this league, the blood and the sweat and the tears that the coaches and the players and the scouts put into the product every Sunday, and then to have it mistakenly called because of either a poor rule, an inconsistent rule, a replay situation that didn't work out right, or something that just doesn't make sense, that seems criminal to me.
Ken, you're still with us. Good.
I'm still with you.
You know, I've thought this not just about the NFL. I've thought this about a lot of sports, in baseball. and I think replay, I believe this. Yeah, we always say we want to get it right. Well, we were all fans for a long time before replay came into effect. And you know what? I genuinely – and the sports were fine. I believe replay has, in a way, it's call it subconsciously, it makes officials, umpires, refs, everybody almost a little lazy because they can count on the replay.
I don't know.
I know, but also the replay also knows that they're also going to be second guessed. It's a listen. I've seen it.
And the replay rarely overturns a call on the field, which I think is ridiculous, considering that's the whole reason to go to the booth.
Well, actually, don't you can't go there because if you remember, Tom Coughlin's track record with the Giants on replays was like 75%.
Yeah,
it was very good.
It was very good.
So it is effective and when it's used properly. But my complaint is we have rules in this league. I mean, Russ went nuts when Sterling Shepard drops a ball 3 steps out of bounds and loses a touchdown.
After
and you know
he
what?
Took 3 steps with it inbounds.
And he's right. The rule is ridiculous.
And the problem, Ken, is this. Look, we could agree, okay, we don't like this replay, we don't like that replay. But to me, any rule that you can't understand, and I'm not just talking about the layman fan, I'm talking about people who cover the sport on a regular basis, including players and coaches. If you can't understand the rule, then something is bad as Dan Reeves would say, something is bad wrong with the situation.
Yes.
And that
I mean, it's billions of dollars going to this on a weekly. You would think that they would revisit these rules more often.
And that's why I want to make this very clear. This is a general opinion about the rules and how the game is regulated. This is not about the Giants. This is not about a particular play. This is an across-the-board condemnation, if you will, because, my friend, you sound like a logical guy. If I said to you, why should a pass be incomplete after a receiver gets both feet in bounds in the end zone, has control of the ball, and then takes 2 steps out of bounds and loses it when he hits the ground? Give me one good reason why that should not be a touchdown. Explain that to me.
Especially after he took 3 steps after catching
it
in the end zone.
I'm sorry?
What if he spiked it and didn't lose it? That's the exact same result that one stands as a touchdown.
And that's the point. That's exactly the point. There is no good reason to explain or to understand why some of the rules are on the books as they are. And I would just like the league to re-examine things of that nature and say, we got to clean this up because – There's no sense here. It doesn't work.
You know, Ken. Just getting to thank you very much for the call, Ken. But just getting to your point, because and I know where you were going. You want the offensive line to play better, Ken. But really, wait. You can't say the Giants haven't given Eli Manning any talent. You know, Odell.
Well, no, they haven't got him any protection.
Well, okay, if you want to say, because remember something. There's Odell, Brandon Marshall, okay, he got hurt. Sterling Shepard, Engram. There are certainly guys for him
talent.
to throw to. It's just a question of, that's why I said, and thanks for the call.
Can I say one more thing, guys?
Real quick, Kenny. Got to go to the next call.
I just want to let you know, my frustration is amplified. I live in Trenton, New Jersey. Everyone I work with is an Eagles fan. Everybody on my route, I drive a truck for a butcher shop. Everybody on my route is in Pennsylvania. They're all Eagles fans. For 5 weeks, my name was not Kenny. It was Owen. Owen 1, Owen 2, Owen 3, Owen 4, and Owen 5. I got tortured all year, and it will continue for the rest of the year. So I would like the franchise to know that we're out here suffering too.
Well,
they do understand.
But listen, so at least your name's now changed from Owen to 1. All right, buddy. Thanks for the call, Ken. Appreciate it. Good caller.
Very good caller.
And
very rational. And again, I love the fact that he brought up a league-wide problem, which is not just something that's directed at a particular team. I'm not going there. I'm not going into conspiracy where people are out to get the Giants.
No, I don't buy it. I'm not buying that.
I'm going into the rule book and saying, clean the damn thing up.
100%. Marvin in Delaware. What's up, Marv?
Hey, how you guys doing?
How you doing, Marv?
I'm doing good. I talked to Paul before.
Yes, sir.
About a month ago. I told him I coached up in Massachusetts.
Yes, I remember the call.
One of my kids played with Victor Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Up at UMass. And when I was calling real quick, I had two things to say. One real quick was that everybody on Jerry Reese and on this team, and I coach. The only thing I feel you could say is Jerry Reese and these guys, they can't make everybody happy. When I was coaching, I told the same thing. I lose no matter what because I can't make everybody happy. So
sure.
They're going to get the negative with all of this. And, you know, well-deserved in some cases, but those guys out there trying as hard as they can. The other team's trying to win, too. So
it is what it is. And believe me, Marv, you know, Jerry knows it full well. He knows it comes with – Jerry's a big boy. He's a grown man. He knows it comes with the territory. It's been that way from the get-go. Listen, that is part of being a GM, especially in this city. It's every move you make is magnified. If you belch, it's magnified.
And trust me, there's not a pro GM, coach, or player in New York City who relishes the losing atmosphere and the toxin that floats around them after they lose.
If you enjoy that,
then your head's backwards.
I agree with that. And you can see it in his face. He's hurt about what's happened to this team.
Of course.
Well, everybody's hurt.
Jerry's gone through that.
We had a caller yesterday, Marv, and again, you've heard me say it today if you've been listening. I know how important the fans are to this organization, but the caller brought up, and it was Len, who's a terrific caller of ours from Maryland.
Yes.
And he was talking about, well, if you want to know what's pain, just speak to the fans. Trust me on this. As much as it's painful for the fans, it is – nobody takes it worse than the players and the coaches.
The teams. That's right.
Nobody.
In this particular case, ownership does because this ownership views its team as its family.
It is family.
And nobody hurts more and is more disappointed or frustrated when the Giants lose than the Mara and Tisch families. I can guarantee you that.
Go ahead.
And I agree with that. And that fans don't know and don't understand it because they know they have all the answers. And it's easy standing on the sideline and talk about this stuff. Unless you're in it, you don't understand.
Well, you know why?
And I do understand
Because fans don't have to sit there and deal with injuries. They don't have to deal with salary caps. They don't have to deal with the other team's game plans.
They also don't have to deal with people calling them bums. Hey, how do you think Eric – I'm serious about this. Eric Flowers is, what, 22? 23 years old. He's coming in every day, and people are – he knows what they're saying about him. He knows what they're writing about
him. Oh, they got voodoo dolls of him.
Yeah, it's – you know, people forget – yeah, he's a football player, and
he's a person
and he's paid money, but he's a person too. And you're right; they forget that.
And they all are people. And
sure, they are
a person. And I think the team's just trying to keep him encouraged to play and improve. And the fans and everybody's trying to break him down, and that's not helping at all.
Marv, are you still coaching, Marv?
I now work in the D.C. area. I work for the government. They transferred me from Boston to the D.C. area, so I don't get to work with kids as much.
Uh-huh.
But I do some scouting, and I'm in a program where it helps kids to get in college. I had 27 of them that played college ball.
Awesome. So, you are such a good example and a reasonable guy. So please continue to do that.
Yeah, I do. But the other thing I wanted to talk to is real quick was Paul was asking a question a couple of weeks ago about Apple playing corner.
Yep.
And I'm not a pro at this, but what we do is Apple is a great defender in as far as playing the receiver.
He shadows very well. You're right.
He needs to anticipate the routes better based on the situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we do, I teach them based on situation, can give you an indication of what the routes are going to be. And then what we did with our corners, only on our level in high school and stuff, we allow our corners to run routes with the receivers so they can understand routes a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And I think that's the only thing he needs to do is work on his ball skills, and anticipating situations a little better. I'm not a pro at it. It's just an idea.
Marvin, I would also suggest to you that I think Eli Apple has lost some confidence, and I don't think he trusts his skills. And I think a lot of times, even though he's shadowing guys at the end of a play, when it's time to finish the play, I think he's not assertive and he's hesitating and he's not finishing it off because he's not trusting his skills. I don't think sometimes he realizes he's really there and he absolutely could make the play.
Yes, he can make the play. And I believe it's part of what you're saying. And it may be the fear of getting beat. And he's not aggressive because he's hesitant in those cases.
Confidence all over again.
He's just got to believe in what he sees.
Absolutely.
And what he can do.
Yeah. I'm with you, Marvin.
You know what, Marvin? Thank you very much for the call. You're a good caller. Please call us again. Listen, when you're 1-6, a lot of players tend to lose confidence. Winning builds confidence. Enough losing makes it go in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And now you got to see just what Paul said earlier. Now you got to see what you're made of, how tough you are to get that confidence back despite all that's going wrong around you.
You remember Corey Webster very well.
Without question.
Came in, very highly thought of prospect, okay? Injured a lot early in his career, inconsistent. Then had a good stretch where he played well.
Right.
Then found himself in a doghouse in 2007 because he lost his confidence again and he wasn't playing well. To the end of the season, he regained his spark. Somehow, some way, Spags was able to like get inside his head, regained his confidence again, okay? And all of a sudden, Corey Webster was the terrific player we all thought he would be. And in the postseason, he was phenomenal in the postseason.
He was a big part of that run.
Big part of that run in 2007.
Yeah.
And he was because he was playing assertive and exactly as he should have been able to play all along. Cornerbacks that have lost some confidence are really in a pickle because they have to have that assertiveness to make the play.
What you show me any athlete.
But especially those guys.
Yes.
But they're on an island alone.
You're right. It's like a fielder in baseball. Please don't let the ball be hit to me. Please don't let, you know, there are certain guys who want that ball in the big moment.
Yeah.
Who mm-hmm. you know, when it's crunch time, there's that receiver who wants it, or Landon Collins wants the play coming to him. Whether he makes it all the time or not, he wants the play coming to him.
And it may take the offseason for Apple to get that back. He may not even get it in the second half of this year.
He did have a good game last week. He made a terrific play breaking up what looked like a short touchdown to Graham.
Yes, he did.
You know, he broke that up very well. Laurie in New York. Laurie, how are we doing today?
Hello.
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to be on. It's my first call, and I thank you guys for all the information you give us fans.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Just to put it mildly, my dad taught me about the Giants when Y.A. Tittle was playing.
There you go.
Cool.
I've seen the good and the bad and the tough years, and I'm still here. And I just have a kind of a general question, if I may. I know the Maras and the Tishes have always been real focused on their team and their fans and honesty. And I just wonder what they are thinking when they see McAdoo go out during a press conference and be rude and arrogant and refuse to answer questions. And when somebody like Reese got up yesterday, spoke for, 21 minutes, and basically came out with nothing as far as, I think we should do this or maybe we can try that, just put the blame on Eli and the team for buying into things and for not trying hard enough. And I mean, the information that's coming out from those two men is that basically we don't care what you media think and we don't care what you fans think, because this is who our spokesmen are. And as a fan for this many years, I'm kind of hurt. And I don't know if the Maras and the Tishes realize who their spokesmen are anymore.
Well, Laurie, I'm going to respectfully, and I can hear the passion coming out in your voice, but mm-hmm. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. There's a couple of things here. The uh-huh. media is not in love with Jerry Reese. We know that.
Or Ben McAdoo.
I don't blame them.
McAdoo's been nothing but rude to everybody.
I
he repeats the same. Wait, They ask him a question, and he'll say, "I answered that," or the same answer.
Well,
and,
but
I mean, where is their communication he's got a wall up there?
Hold on a second. Let me explain something to you. Because
yeah.
I've been covering these press conferences and covering these players and coaches mm-hmm. for over 30 years.
Yeah.
When this is how it goes. Sometimes the question gets asked. If I ask Paul, "Hey Paul, what kind of shirt you wearing today?" Paul says blue. And then somebody's going to say, "Well, Paul, is it a dark blue? Is it a light blue?"
Mm-hmm.
And Paul's going to say,
yeah.
"I answered that question." I mean,
I understand that, but McAdoo's not answering the questions.
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
I've been listening to them for a good 40 years, and I disagree because
okay.
as a fan, it's not what I need to hear from my team.
Okay.
And the people that are coaching.
Lori,
I respect your opinion.
That's my opinion.
I accept
Lori,
it, but I disagree with you. Thank you for the call.
I do appreciate the call, and I appreciate her being a fan for so many years too. I would say this: there's no question that coaches are under a different glare and a different spotlight than others, and so they have to deal with things how they think it's best to do. Tom Coughlin sometimes was very short with the media at times too.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Tom bit my head off a number of times, and it's okay.
Let me ask you.
I got thick skin.
Let me ask you a question. Since, you know when people don't like coaches' short remarks? When the team is losing.
Oh, that too.
What, was Bill Parcells warm and fuzzy with the media?
I actually love Bill.
Yeah, we loved him because he was great. You know, and quite frankly, I've said this many times. Bill was terrific for my career because I was able to talk to him. But boy, did he bite your head off and look at you?
He wasn't afraid to come at you.
Make fun of you and be sarcastic. Believe me, sarcasm was his strong point.
Yes.
So, but you know what the problem is? When you are losing, that's when nobody likes what you have to say. When you're winning, it's all good.
I also want to address Lori's one other point, and I do think this is important. We can tell you firsthand, because we have a relationship with the people in this building, we know how much the Tishes and the Maras are disappointed and how much it hurts them every time the team loses and something goes wrong. As we said, they are not going to make the emotional decision. They're not going to make comments based on emotion. John Mara often speaks to us at the end of the season and addresses us and gives his state of the team because that's the time to do it. For him to come out now, or Mr. Tisch to come out now and talk while games are still to be played, that's not the business model the Giants run under. They, you know, this is not a Jerry Jones situation in Dallas where Jerry has to basically talk to the media almost every day. I mean, he just is free willy about whatever his opinion is any time of the day, 24/7. That's not the way this organization runs things. So your request to have ownership speak to you during the course of the season, win or lose, the Giants believe that ownership is better in the background. And it's not better to have them in the foreground. That's not the way they do business here, win or lose. So please don't be offended by that, because you really shouldn't be.
And you know, there are a few other dynamics which sometimes the fan doesn't realize, because the fan is watching, let's say, the press conference, but they don't know who's asking the respective questions. And you know, a guy like Ben, or for that matter, I've seen it several times with other coaches and GMs in all sports. You don't know who's asking a question, and some of these coaches know this particular person, said person asking a question, is asking that question strictly to get me, strictly for that reason. I want to be the person to create the controversy. I'm going to be the guy, bang, who gives it to him. So that
does happen.
There's that cat and mouse going on. It does. It exists.
You've all watched White House press conferences, I'm sure, and that goes on in Washington even more than it does in
a
sports locker room.
But it exists. You know what? Whether you like it or not, it exists, and that's part of the dynamic.
All right.
Mike in North Bergen. Mike, how are we doing today?
Yo, what's going on?
What's up, Mike? Uh-oh, your mic.
He's gone.
Unfortunately, you were disconnected, so give us a call back. We'll get you right up. In the meantime, let's head down to Rob in Florida. Rob, how are we doing today?
Hey, we're doing good. I'm back. I got a bad connection last time.
All right, buddy.
You know, like I was saying before, that I was happy when Jerry Reese actually became GM. I had high hopes for him, and I'm learning his job. But I over the time, I've had to be honest and say, you know what, where a lot of our faults are because of his early failures are now starting to actually catch up with the team as far as talent. Now, recently he's done okay, but those early years on that learning curve is what is starting to show up now, where people are saying, you know, the O-line, the talent isn't there, you know, the depth isn't there. But that comes from a few years or several years of failed drafts.
Okay.
It's getting better. It's getting better, and
right.
I hope it continues to get better. But right now there's really not much I expect them to be able to do short of just going out and getting a bunch of free agents. There's really not much you can do about it. And you just got to, unfortunately for me and the rest of the fan base, got to kind of just grin and bear it and hope they do the best with what they got, because it's not going to change. Like, what they have right now isn't going to change. It just, they have to work as good as they can with the talent they have.
Well, I ask you this. Hold on. Because I think I get your point. You can't change history. The picks that were made 4 or 5 years ago, those picks were made, and either they worked out or didn't work out, and you can't do anything to change that. Now, you're right. The last couple of years, the Giants seem to have gotten more production from their draft picks, and things looked as though they're going to be more positive. So all you can do at this point is say, okay, how did we change some of our decision-making processes the last couple of years when the production was better, and is that the way we're going to move forward? That's about all you can do. To go back and say, well, now I want to torch somebody for something that happened 5 years ago doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
You there?
No, I'm here, and I'm agreeing with you. I mean, I would actually love to be more upset with everything, but you really, you almost gotta, you know, you can't because nothing that the guys in power right now, there's nothing they can do but try and work with what they got.
Well, that's what we were saying. You know, I don't know if you were listening earlier, Rob. That's what they were saying. We were saying earlier, you have to. It is what it is. You're 1-6. Now we got to see what you're made out of. You got to see how, you know, everybody at this juncture, everybody's job is on a line. Now we're going to find out what you're made of. How much do you want to get out of the hole that you've helped create and move forward? So it's up to them to do it. Thanks for the call, Rob. Call us again. Appreciate it. While we're down in Florida, let's stay down in Florida. Check in with.
You want to go up here.
Oh, go up.
Yeah, he wanted to go there.
Let's go to North Bergen first. Okay, Mike in North Bergen. Are you with us now, Mikey?
Yo, Russ, I'm with you guys. What's going on, Paul?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Listen, man, I just want to cut out all this nonsense with Eli that we got the weakest quarterback in the division. I mean, listen, Carson Wentz is having a pretty good season, but let's be honest, Paul. What happened with Nick Foles? He was good, and what happened? We don't even hear about that guy.
Oh,
no
he's
more.
Not. No, no. You know, Carson Wentz is going to be good for the next decade.
Yeah.
Foles, I always thought, was a flash in the pan. And with all due respect, I'm a big Eli Manning guy, but I don't think he's going to be starting in this league 10 years from now.
No.
To be honest with you.
No, he ain't going to be starting 10 years from now, but we're talking about right now and maybe like the next 2-3 years. I don't think this guy's going to be the next best thing. The guy, the Dak Prescott, he's a joke, please. And then we got this other guy, the Cousins. I mean, come on, we've exposed them over and over again. And I know they could get better in time, but I'm talking about as of right now, I think we still have the best quarterback in the division. He's got an awesome resume. I don't got to go through it. And, I mean, we're having a crazy year, no doubt about it. But let's just, you know, let's look into next year. And I think starting fresh next year, we're going to be a team. We're going to be a problem. And I think Eli still got it in him as long as everybody's on the same page. But I do got to throw this in real quick. I got to agree with that one caller before. McAdoo, he's a real Mama Luke. And I don't know. I just don't trust him, man. I really don't.
All right. Thank you for the call, Mike. And I think we found out that you are no longer the best Giants fan. Mike from North Bergen is talk about making a rosy picture.
Hey, I'm an Eli guy, too.
No, we all are Eli guys.
I'm going to tell you right now, of all the quarterbacks in the division, if I were playing a Super Bowl tomorrow, Eli's the guy I'd want. Yeah. I'm not lying to you.
Well, I'm just going to disagree with Mike on one thing. Mr. McAdoo is no Mama Luke.
I'm not even sure what that is.
You call it a knucklehead. Let's go to Mike in Florida.
No, he wants to go to Lisa. He's telling me.
Lisa? Let's go to Lisa. Okay, Lisa.
I'm getting the sign here. Go ahead.
Hi, guys.
What's going on, Lisa?
Hey, Lisa. What's up?
I'm an Eli girl. I have to tell you a funny story because you were saying before you can't make decisions when you're angry.
Right.
You know, you have to wait. I have more memorabilia on Eli Manning, you wouldn't believe. I have jerseys. I even have his shoe signed.
I'm a huge
Giant fan, but I love my Eli. There was a game once, I remember a few years ago, I was ready to rip his jersey. That's how mad I was.
Right.
But I thought better of it. The next day, the jersey was still there.
Good idea.
But that's just a funny story. But I had a question. I love that caller who called, and Paul talked about it, about changing the way the Giants call plays, about becoming more of a running team when Eli is towards the end of his career, which is, I think, is a really smart thing. Become more of a run team, get a more in the trenches, get a better line, get a good running back,
yeah,
a fullback. But McAdoo, isn't McAdoo kind of a West Coast kind of guy? He likes to throw. How do you do that when your coach isn't really that kind of a coach with a run game? Do you think he would change up, or we can become that kind of team run first?
Well, I'm sorry.
Well,
Paul,
Hampton Sullivan, the playbook was one way to alter that perspective, and now with the self-scout, perhaps they'll decide, in fact, they do need to reactivate Shane Smith at fullback because he's been off the roster now for several weeks.
You know, part of – Lisa, thanks always, my dear, for the call. We're running short on time. I want to get this other call.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great day, guys.
You too.
I want to get this other caller in. A lot of times what dictates how you operate, whether you're West Coast or what your favorite passion is
your weaponry.
Yeah, your personnel, what you have. Listen, Mike in Florida has been holding on, and I want to get to him. We got about a minute and a half, Mikey, so go ahead. What do you got for us?
Hey, Russ, you were absolutely right that success allows head coaches to speak any way they want. You just have to go up to Boston and to look at that coach and how he responds to the media.
Bingo! Bingo!
So that's one. One of the concerns that a group of my friends have, and some of them are actually out in San Diego, is the Giants' ability to evaluate linemen, whether it's be offensive or defensive linemen. And they say they think that's a real hang-up in the organization. And they point to this year where everybody had so much great faith in the two tackles because they saw them doing workouts, but workouts don't simulate the real conditions on the field. What do you guys think about that?
Well, yeah, and again, Mike, thank you. Call us again next week. By the way, fans, just so you know, there's no Big Blue Kickoff tomorrow or Thursday because
Thursday or Friday. Tomorrow is Thursday.
That's what I said.
You said tomorrow or Thursday.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tomorrow or Friday. Well, we're all we're all a little famished here, as they say. But let me say this: we know that the offensive line has been the whipping boys for pretty much most of the season, more so than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about, like you mentioned, assessing the line on defense as well. Now, whether they drafted or signed them as free agents, I think the acquisitions of assessing just how good they are when they were able to get Snacks Harrison and Olivier Vernon, I think that's a pretty darn good assessment. Nobody was complaining about that assessment last year. And you know what? You're not complaining about that assessment this year. Obviously, OV has been hurt. So I do understand offensive line. If you want to complain, I get that. Jerry said they believed in it. If that was a miscalculation, so be it. You know, that's what they believed in. But if you're going to talk about assessing defensive line talent, I mean, I got to disagree with that one.
I'm just going to make one quick analogy here, okay? You can go into your Thanksgiving meal and get all the ingredients and follow the recipe and cook it exactly the way the instructions say, and then maybe the turkey comes out too dry, because sometimes it just happens. It doesn't mean the recipe was bad. It doesn't mean you didn't follow the recipe. It just didn't turn out as good as you wanted it to be. Sometimes that happens, Russ. They call it four-letter word, happens. It starts with an S. I think we all know what we're talking about. Sometimes it just happens.
Is that what your wife tells you when a turkey comes out a little dry?
No, she tells me that I should have taken her out. Anyway, that's all I'm saying, folks. That's the way it works sometimes.
Well, listen, it is what it is. We are in the bye week. We won't see you till next week. And like I said, it's probably good for the team to just to get away, to get the negativity out of their system and come back. And then we're going to find out what everybody has moving forward. And it will start against the Rams. Until that time, for Paul Dottino, Paulie Dotz, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thanks for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. We'll see you next week.
You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.